We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
If you love words and wordplay, here's a book you should look for. The Pun Also Rises, How the Humble Pun Revolutionized Language, Changed History, and Made Wordplay More Than Some Antics. From the title, it is clear author John Pollack is a fan of the pun. In fact, he won the 1995 O. Henry Pun Off World Championship. Pollack argues the history, use, and meaning of puns provide us with insights about language, wordplay, creativity, and the development of modern civilization. John, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Celeste. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Well, you tell readers that there are carved records from the first millennium B.C. that tell of riddling duels whose answers depended on puns. And those contests were very serious, weren't they?
Yes, and sometimes they could escalate to armed violence and even minor wars among the nobility there, all because of missing a pun.
Mm. So fighting words could be fighting puns.
Indeed.
Yeah. So how long has humankind been punning?
Well, the evidence actually suggests that the first puns are about 35,000 years old. And we know that because there are carved stone statuettes about the size of an Oscar. If you look at one side, it's a naked woman, and if you rotate it 180 degrees, it's a phallus. And what it shows is that people could conceive of opposites united in a single object, and it was history's first double entendre, effectively.
So it seems we're drawn to puns because we're still doing it, right?
We're still doing it, and we is really all of humanity, whether you're talking about speakers of Aborigine languages in Central Australia or Tzotzil speakers in the Chiapas Highlands of southern Mexico, Chinese bloggers pun, French pun, we pun. It's something that transcends all major families of languages.
Is this because as humans we depend so heavily on words, on language in our relationships with one another?
Yes, and also because there are an infinite number of ideas to express in this world and only a limited number of sounds. And so it's inevitable that sounds are going to have to do double duty. And it's that confusion, that ambiguity, that overlap that generates a lot of the punning that we hear.
Yeah. And we like to be tickled.
We do. I mean, who doesn't like to laugh? But I might add that the pun wasn't always considered humorous. That's a development in the last 300-400 years or so. For thousands of years, puns were defined by just their multiplicity of meaning. They could be humorous or serious, and in fact, if you look at Shakespeare, when puns were at their apex, he used puns in comic situations, but also in deadly serious situations, such as Macbeth, and talking about murder. And puns were just a rhetorical device to pack more meaning into fewer words.
Well, tell us about how puns were used before the Allied invasion of Normandy.
Well, that's very interesting. The French resistance would receive coded instructions over Radio London and then use a very popular book of French puns to decode what those messages meant. And it would include, you know, blow up this bridge, go rescue this downed Allied airman in this village. And so it was a very clever way that if you were an occupying army, you wouldn't necessarily have a grasp of the language to catch the pun, and B, there would be no way to figure out the code.
Yeah. So why are puns so often met with disdain, a comment about being the lowest form of humor?
Well, a couple things. One is several factors conspired to drive the pun to its low status. It used to be high status in Shakespeare's day, but one major factor was the rise of the printing press. The printing press transformed what was largely an oral culture into a culture of the written word. And when you write down a word, you have to choose a spelling. And when you choose a spelling, you favor one meaning over another. And so puns are at their best as a spoken form. And in written form, you already kind of get the joke before it's over. The second major factor was the Enlightenment and the rise of scientific reason. And as scientists in England applied scientific rigor to classifying everything, to trying to understand natural law, language proved very elusive and difficult to corral, puns especially so. Puns being ambiguous by their nature were marginalized, and so they got kicked to the curb of humor and where they sit today.
Okay, so we're still at the low end of things then today.
Well, huh? I want to add that what we are seeing a pun renaissance, and the way I judge that is if you look at the marketplace and you want to go get some ice cream, for example, you walk into the grocery store and there's Ben and Jerry's. You might get Cherry Garcia flavor or Caramel Sutra. Or if you need office supplies, you go to Staples. If you look at the sign of Staples, the L is a bent staple. It's a visual pun. Or, for example, I just got a new iPhone, and the instructions, the little miniature instruction manual, is named Fingertips. So we see puns in a lot of places that don't evoke groans. We just think they're clever. In the joke context, we sometimes groan.
Now, the pun takes many forms. There's the Shaggy Dog story, a Shaggy example cut short here, a baker who could increase productivity by slicing more than one loaf of bread at a time. Ultimately, he sought out a four-loaf cleaver.
Yeah, and that's a good example of a spoonerism, too, where you're reversing components of words back and forth. And, for example, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. Also another type of pun.
Yeah, which also you include in the book. Do you have a favorite type of pun?
Well, my favorite puns are always the most straightforward puns that are based on similarity of sound that come up in the ordinary course of a conversation, because of those are the usually the most playful and in context. I always say that puns make a great appetizer. They're not so great as a main course. Mm. Sort of like potato chips. The first couple taste great, and if you eat the whole bag, you're like, ugh, why did I do that?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think is most delightful is when a child learns about the knock-knock joke.
Yes.
This is a form that delights children, and it turns out that this is quite complex, but here we see the development of language and an appreciation in a child for the magic of words.
Yeah, Celeste, you're absolutely right. And the brain actually has to go through some very complex gymnastics to divine the meaning of a word that could sound like that could have many different meanings. So, for example, knock knock.
Who's there?
Isabel.
Isabel who?
Isabel necessary on a bicycle. Now we might think, oh, that's juvenile or that's silly,
yeah.
But the brain actually has to work real hard to interpret that and say, oh, not just Isabel the name, but is a bell, as in the mm-hmm. device to make noise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when kids learn knock-knock jokes, it's one of the first times they're learning to look for the meaning of words beneath the surface. And so they're learning a very important skill in life, and that is to say, what does that person really mean?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is interesting because just right now I'm reminded of my first pun. I was really little, and I had an Aunt Isabel. I still do. She's
dear,
near and dear to me, but I couldn't say Isabel, so I called her Aunt Ding.
there you go. And that's a great leap of imagination and really quite complex, especially as a child. And it's that capacity to associate disparate ideas, but in a way that makes sense, that is the engine of human progress. I mean, someone in the cave banging two rocks together gives a spark, and I think, well, maybe if I add some dry grass next to the spark, we'll start a fire. And then you learn to boil water, and then to generate steam, and then to generate electricity, and then to create radio communications. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And all of human progress is associating unlikely ideas and seeing a connection between them. That's what punning is.
Yeah. It's those eureka moments.
Eureka moments.
And you don't smell so good either. Sorry, that was terrible. John, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
Celeste, thanks for having me.
Sure. John Pollock is the author of The Pun Also Rises, How the Humble Pun Revolutionized Language, Changed History, and Made Wordplay More Than Some Antics. The publisher is Gotham Books.